Tonight, we continue our series of in-depth interviews with the major party candidates to represent Montana. A conversation with Steve Daines is our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen. We'll also hear from election officials about a political mailer that's causing confusion and complaints from Montana voters. If you've received an official-looking mailer that rates the political leanings of Montana's four nonpartisan Supreme Court candidates, take a close look. The flyer features an image of Montana's state seal and compares the candidates' political ideologies to those of President Obama and former Republican Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. But the seals are fake. The state of Montana has nothing to do with these mailers. Montana Secretary of State Linda McCullough says they've been delivered to homes in Helena, Kalispell, Missoula, and Billings. In fact, McCullough says she found one in her personal mailbox yesterday.
You know, for my realm, it's the use of the Great Seal of the state of Montana. I'm the keeper of the Great Seal, and I grant permission to use the Great Seal, and I have never granted permission on political flyers. We've received a lot of phone calls and people wondering and really outraged that it came from our office. It did not come from our office. And I just want to make sure people understand that. We wouldn't send out campaign mailers anyway.
McCullough says the legality of these flyers will have to be determined by Jonathan Modell, Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices. Edward O'Brien spoke with Modell earlier today.
There's a low-level drumbeat on what people perceive as unfair campaign practices, and that happens throughout the election cycle. But every now and then, there's something that happens that hits a nerve. And this particular election flyer has hit a major nerve. We have had more complaints in the area of 20 to 30 alone between late yesterday afternoon and so far today about this complaint. What most people are complaining of is the use of the Great Seal on a document that is targeting a candidate race. It is not a voter's guide put out by the Secretary of State, and it has no blessing of any official of the state of Montana. So to the extent it's trying to portray itself as that, it's completely false.
It apparently is some sort of an academic product coming out of Stanford and Dartmouth colleges. Is that right?
Well, it could be, and we're tracing that right now. Now, the reason we've got some concern is because there's a considerable amount of money, you've probably read the publications as well as me, that shows that the Koch brothers' money has funneled down into colleges and universities for research related to political issues. And this particular document, even though it, from what I've seen, has its origin in a young assistant professor at Dartmouth, he came out of a research tank before that. And so we need to find out if indeed there's some sort of funding going on through the academic that would prompt a academician to do something that seems so strange, if indeed it is a research project. Why would you misappropriate the Great Seal and portray it as a voter's guide? Makes no sense.
As you and your staff then go to suss this out, let's say it is. Let's say it's just as you say, comes from the Koch brothers to this young researcher. Is this illegal? Is it slightly improper?
Well, again, we're in this era where we need to protect election speech as robust. And the First Amendment is being applied now to maximum speech. I don't know how old you are. I'm 67, and I remember the First Amendment as being applied to give people who didn't have an advantage in speech, people who were disadvantaged because of race, color, creed, sex, equal footing. Well, now it's being applied to maximum speech. So that's what we deal with constitutionally, and that is the law of the land. That's Citizens United. So it could be that in the end, this is acceptable speech, but that doesn't mean that if it's acceptable, it's legally acceptable speech. That doesn't mean that it's fair or that it shouldn't be explained. So in the end, it might just be an explanation of where this money came from and why this particular flyer was sent out. I think probably part of this is that a researcher on one of the coasts, east or west, it doesn't really matter, may not appreciate how possessive and proud Montanans are of their state. They may have doubts about our political system, maybe have doubts about the people running our political system, but they don't have doubts about the state of Montana. They love it. They're proud of it, and they don't like it when the Great Seal of Montana is appropriated like this.
It just seems like outright misrepresentation, but...
Well, it hit a nerve. We have a lot of upset Montanans, and I don't blame them.
Yeah. Okay, so now what happens next?
Our job, we're a small office, as you know, there's only seven of us in here, but we act for the people of Montana in instances like this. We understand that people are upset, and we will do our best to follow and get to the bottom of it and find out exactly how this... I mean, it could be that it's just a misunderstood application of academic adventurism. That may be. And if it is, we will tell the people of Montana that's what it is. But if it's something more than that, then we'll tell them that too.
Lawrence Van Dyke, Mike Wheat, David Herbert, and Jim Rice are candidates for Montana's open Supreme Court seats. Republican U.S. House candidate Ryan Zinke says he's working to find and release a missing military record before the November 4th election. Zinke said today his staff is pressing the U.S. Navy to release a 1999 report that opponents say should show how he departed Navy SEAL Team 6. Zinke's incomplete military records reemerged as an issue during a candidate debate earlier this week when he referred to a reporter's question about the report as shameful. Zinke's campaign says they requested all of his records from the Navy on September 1st, but haven't received them yet. Zinke insists the records only show a commendable military career. Zinke faces Democrat John Lewis in the November 4th election. We continue our election coverage now with the fourth in our series of in-depth interviews with the major party candidates for Montana's U.S. House and Senate seats. Tonight, Montana Public Radio News Director Eric Whitney's conversation with Steve Daines.
Steve Daines, thank you so much for joining us on Montana Public Radio.
Great to be here today.
I'm new to Montana. What's important for me to understand about this state?
It is the greatest state in the country, and I think it's the quality of life that we have here. This, you know, the amazing, the mountains, the streams, the wide open country combined with the work ethic, the people here that don't complain about things. They just get things done, and the way we're raised and our way of life here makes it a very, very special and unique place.
You've spent one term in the House representing Montana. How do you see serving in the Senate as similar or different?
Montana is one of the seven states that only has but one member in Congress. So in that sense, representing the great state of Montana, I've covered the entire state. But in the Senate, it's one of 100. There have been some real challenges back in Washington. It's broken fundamentally. The House passed over 350 bills, many with bipartisan support, getting Republicans and Democrats to agree on legislation that we passed, that the Senate has not been willing to take up for debate. And so I'm hoping that we can see some new leadership in the Senate and allow more legislation to move through the Senate and start working on the problems and finding solutions here that the country faces.
You think the Tea Party movement has been good for America?
I think what the Tea Party did is it got a lot of people who were not otherwise politically active engaged in the political process. They were concerned about the overreach of the government, important to our country, and the values we hold as a democracy. Is the more voices that are heard, I think that is overall healthy for our country.
Do you identify yourself as a Tea Party candidate?
I identify myself as a pragmatic conservative. I went to Montana State University and received an engineering degree. In fact, I'm one of the few engineers serving on the Hill. You know, engineers get trained to identify a problem and then find a solution. And I found those skills served me well in my 28 years in business. It has served me well in Congress. In fact, of the 75 first-term members in Congress, I was ranked the most effective. It was 40 Democrats and 35 Republicans that started serving in 2013, as measured by actually getting bills moved through committee. Back in Washington, you have many members that believe that the way you are successful is co-sponsor a bill and issue a press release. Well, that's just the start of the journey. You need to actually get bills moved through.
There's always a lot of talk about money in politics and political campaigns. I think there's been even more of that lately with the Citizens United decision. And I wonder what your view, if you think the court made the right call in Citizens United.
Well, I'll tell you, as I travel all over Montana, and I've been to all 56 counties, spent a lot of time having quiet cups of coffee with Montanans from all different ways of life in our state. And a pretty consistent message I hear is there's too much money in politics. there's not enough transparency in the political process, particularly as it relates to elections and to campaign finance. But also, there's a very important principle that was held by the Supreme Court, which is respect for the First Amendment and the freedom of speech. And you know, they came down with their decision with Citizens United. But I think it's important that the playing field is level, that the rules are the same for all involved. At the same time, it's very important that the First Amendment and the freedom of speech is upheld.
So you think that was the right call, and that the Montanans that you talked to, do you think that they would agree that that's the right decision, and the rights of corporations to make those kinds of contributions are healthy for the process?
Certainly, there's varying and diverse views. But I do know that I respect the court that will uphold the principles of the First Amendment. And I respect the decision here to respect the First Amendment rights.
I know you're aware that per capita income in Montana is among the lowest in the country. What needs to be done to change that, and what can Congress do to change that?
Well, you look at the Department of Labor stats around where are the highest paying jobs in our economy. And natural resources is on that short list. You know, somebody who grew up in Montana, was educated in the public school systems and the university system here in Montana, I was one of those kids that left the state after graduating from MSU. I left for 13 years. It's been said our three greatest exports are our cattle, our grain, and our children. And that's because we don't have enough opportunities for our kids to stay here in the state if they want to. So what do we need to do about that? Well, growing up, the license plate said the treasure state in Montana. Now those have since come back in the last few years. But the treasures we have are our natural resources. Some of the highest paying jobs in our economy would be in coal, in oil, in natural gas, in timber. Years ago, we had 30 active sawmills in Montana. Today, we only have 11, in part because of the litigation from fringe groups that have stopped timber harvest on our national forests. And that results in greater risks of catastrophic wildfire, in a loss in jobs. It results in a loss of tax revenues. If you have a place like Lincoln County that has unemployment rates north of 15%, in fact, I was having dinner one night with a couple from Eureka, Montana, and they said, Steve, the way we describe the world up here in the northwest corner of the state is poverty with a view. And so natural resources is one avenue. I think another one is in high tech. I had the privilege of growing a high tech company there, being part of an executive team in my hometown of Bozeman, where we grew hundreds of good high paying jobs. Our average wage there in our company, excluding executive salaries, was about $75,000 a year. And we hired a lot of Montana kids. The best compliment I ever heard was from a grandmother who said to me, Steve, thank you that you guys created these jobs in Bozeman, because now I can drive to Bozeman to see my grandkids instead of having to fly to California or New York or Texas.
I'd like to follow up on specifically what you were saying about the natural resource jobs that you think Montana needs to create more of. What's standing in the way of those jobs being created, and what can Congress do to create more jobs?
We'll talk two important areas, and one is on timber. We passed a bill in the House. It's Restoring Healthy Communities and Healthy Forest Act. It passed with bipartisan support, and we got that bill through the House. It is not easy to take a bill all the way through the process and get it through one of the chambers, but we're able to do that. And what that bill will do, it would streamline some of the approval processes. It would require bonding for some of these litigants who are continually challenging timber sales. It makes them put some skin in the game. One of the tragic consequences of litigation right now in Montana with some of these fringe groups is the taxpayer is paying for that litigation.
They only pay if the litigants win, though. So if the litigants prove a point that a law was being broken and they win, they get their legal fees covered, right?
They get, yeah, and that's been paid out by over $600,000 to date in Montana alone. So it's stopping these timber harvests. And you see, for example, just in Montana in the last 2 months, we have been two layoffs announced. Stoltz Lumber up in Columbia Falls laid off 10 folks at their sawmill there, not because there's not demand, because the housing market has come back across the country. It's because they can't get logs. So this bill we passed would create over a couple thousand jobs in Montana in the timber industry alone. It generates tax revenues for our communities, so they're surrounded by national forest, and you give a healthier forest. I think second is some of these regulations coming out of Washington, particularly from the EPA, are a real threat to our coal industry. In fact, I'm heading down to the Crow Reservation to meet with the Crow tribe. The chairman of the tribe, Darren Old Coyote, I asked him what his top three priorities were. He said, they're jobs, jobs, and jobs. And then he said to me, a war on coal is a war on the Crow people. Down there in the Crow Reservation, they have a 50% unemployment rate. It would be 80 or 90% if it weren't for the coal mining jobs they have today. And they have opportunities to grow their economy there and to reduce their dependence on federal programs by creating good high-paying jobs right there on the Crow Reservation. And that same principle applies across a big chunk of eastern Montana.
Do you think Montanans need to be concerned about climate change, and should Congress be taking any action on climate change?
As somebody who has studied the sciences and looking at the data, the climate is changing, clearly. The climate is dynamic. It's always either in some kind of a cooling or warming mode. It has been since the beginning of time. And I do believe there is a human element to climate change. But the question becomes, at what price, as we look at the price to our economy in terms of what it means to reducing our coal production, oil production, and so forth, killing these jobs would be, I think, a tragedy for our country. What it will do is it will raise electricity prices, which is going to have the greatest effect on the middle class in this country. I always think Montanans want a balance on that. And I think we can find that balance.
Your opposition to the Affordable Care Act is well established, and you've said that there needs to be a Montana solution. Can you give me some specifics on what Montana can do to increase the number of people here with the ability to afford health care?
Since the president took office, health care premiums nationally have gone up $3,500 a year on average. And even with Obamacare being implemented, the latest Congressional Budget Office forecast for 2020 says there will still be 31 million Americans uninsured with the full implementation of Obamacare.
I'm wondering if you can give me some specifics for what Montana can do to improve the situation of folks who can't access health care now.
Number one, we've got to address the issue for rural health care in Montana. And we need to be focused on putting the right incentives in place that allows the state to play primacy here in controlling these health care dollars versus dependent on the strings coming from programs out of Washington, D.C. It comes back to allowing competition between states. I'd like to see the ability to work across state lines to buy my health care insurance. I think we need to allow Montanans to have the same deductibility on their taxes for somebody who doesn't work for a company as someone who does. Because today, if you work for a company and get your employer provided health care, that is pre-tax dollars. We need to apply that same law and principle to those who do not work for a company. So you level the playing field here in terms of allowing that incentive and that benefit to those who don't necessarily have employer-provided health care. There's some great ideas starting to come with the legislators that are going to be going up to Helena in January, looking at ways that how do we take care of those in our state who can't afford health care insurance today, and making sure that we take the poorest and the ones who need this care the most and provide a Montana solution to that versus something coming out of D.C.
Congressman Daines, I apologize that we weren't able to start on time and that our time is limited here. But let me say thank you for joining us on Montana Public Radio.
Eric, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
You can hear our full-length interview with Steve Daines at our website, mtpr.org. You'll also find interviews with House candidates Ryan Zinke and John Lewis, as well as Senate candidate Amanda Curtis. And now for your regional weather forecast. West of the Divide tonight, rain showers are likely, lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Friday, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain showers, highs in the 50s. Central Montana, there's a high wind warning in effect from 9 p.m. this evening to 9 a.m. Friday for the Rocky Mountain Front. Wind speeds could reach 65 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, isolated rain showers, lows 40 to 45 degrees. Friday, partly cloudy, slight chance of rain showers, highs 50 to 60 degrees. And in southwest Montana tonight, mostly cloudy, isolated rain showers, lows 35 to 45. And Friday, mostly cloudy again, with slight chance of rain showers, highs 50 to 60 degrees. And that's our newscast for this evening. If you have a comment, don't hesitate to post it on our website at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen. Thank you very much for listening. Please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.